This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Noah Adams. 100 years ago today, President William McKinley was shot as he stood in the receiving line at the 1901 Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York. As McKinley greeted well-wishers, a man approached. He carried a small revolver hidden underneath a handkerchief, and he fired two shots at McKinley from close range. The assassin was Leon Czolgosz, a self-described anarchist. The president died 8 days later from a bullet wound to the abdomen. NPR's Eric Westervelt has this look back at the 1901 Pan American Exposition and the death of the nation's 25th president.
In 1901, Buffalo was a bustling transportation hub and the nation's eighth largest city. And the Pan American Exposition was Buffalo's attempt to remake itself as cultured and capable, to shed its image as a, quote, rude and cumbersome town, as one visitor had put it. Civic leaders hoped a presidential visit to the exposition, a new electric light generated by Niagara Falls, would help put Buffalo on the map as the new century began. Today, neighborhoods and roadways cut through the site of the expo, what was then 350 acres of farmland. But listening to these audio recreations, you can start to imagine what the turn of the century fair might have felt like. In 1901, organizers turned the fields into what they called the Rainbow City of Light and Color. It featured ornate temporary buildings with elaborate exhibits from Central and South American countries. There were games and food booths, fountains, pathways, and a network of man-made lakes and ponds complete with gondola rides. The happy fantasy world of the Midway's rides and freak shows made the president's death even more horrifying. The Midway featured Chiquita, the 26-inch tall piano-playing doll woman, and the popular Trip to the Moon took people in a metal spaceship to an imagined moonscape stage, where you were greeted by midgets dressed as aliens while dancing moon maidens served green cheese. And at nightfall, something new and wondrous to many people in 1901, hundreds of thousands of lights. Cary Grant is the author of the new book, The Rainbow City, An Architectural History of the 1901 Pan American.
The crowds were in such awe that they returned night after night, including Buffalonians, to watch as the sunset and the lights came up. And it's described in every journal that relates to a visit to the Pan Am, how awe-inspiring it was to see this. People were in tears every night when they saw this transformation. It seemed to them to be something, to use a phrase again from 1901, too magic for this world.
Other displays were unredeemably racist. The exhibit, The Old Plantation, celebrated antebellum slave life, complete with the facade of a southern mansion, a cotton field, and Laughing Ben, the happy Negro. It's against this backdrop that President McKinley traveled to the Pan American in September. The president was gregarious, and much to the displeasure of his aides, he loved to greet the public. And despite two presidential assassinations in the last 30 years, there were only three Secret Service agents guarding the president on September 6. After touring Niagara Falls, McKinley stood outside the ornate Temple of Music on the expo grounds. Well-wishers surrounded McKinley. Hundreds had lined up to shake his hand. Historian Jack Fisher.
His executive secretary tried to talk him out of that reception, and he said, no, I've got to meet the common people. He said, I have no enemies. I have nothing to fear.
It was a hot September day, so many in the line were using handkerchiefs to wipe away the sweat. But Leon Czolgosz's cloth concealed a .32-caliber Ivor Johnson revolver. As Czolgosz approached, he shot the president twice in the stomach. Jim Parker, a black man who worked as a waiter at an exposition restaurant, tackled Czolgosz, preventing the assailant from firing a third round. Late in life, Mrs. Weir, we don't know her first name, recalled being at the exposition as a child when the president was shot.
And that day, we went into the music hall, you know, the music. We were in there and heard that great organ, you know, it was supposed to be such a great organ. We hadn't got very far away from there when we heard this big shouting and hollering going on that the president was shot.
Police transported the president to a glorified first aid station on the exposition grounds. Local surgeons soon made the decision to operate and repair McKinley's stomach wound. At first, the operation seemed a success, and for a week, McKinley drifted in and out of consciousness as the nation anxiously waited. A White House aide released daily upbeat reports to the press, all but assuring a quick recovery. But on the sixth day after surgery, McKinley's pulse weakened. On the morning of September 14th, the 58-year-old president is said to have muttered, God's will be done, and passed away. Vice President Theodore Roosevelt rushed to Buffalo from a hunting vacation in the Adirondack Mountains. The Buffalo surgeons, who just days before were praised as heroes, were now vilified as surgical buffoons. Doctors from New York, Philadelphia, and Boston publicly lamented that the president was shot, quote, in that backwater town. Botched surgery, some began to say, was what really killed the president. To this day, many history textbooks say McKinley died from gangrene after flawed medical care. But new research is changing that view.
The president died of a kind of shock that we know and understand today, but was not recognized or understood in that day.
Dr. Jack Fisher is a surgery professor at the University of California at San Diego and author of the just-published history Stolen Glory, The McKinley Assassination, which examines the president's medical care. Dr. Fisher argues that McKinley died from post-operative complications that the surgeons of the day simply weren't aware of.
He was extraordinarily depleted of body fluids, and they didn't have intravenous infusion in those days.
And Fisher believes that the frequent enemas, which surgeons in 1901 believed would aid the president's recovery, only depleted his fluids further. While the 1901 exposition lost money, one misconception, says author Cary Grant, is that it never recovered from the president's death.
It's been said that the assassination killed the exposition as well as the president and brought it to an end in terms of attendance. It didn't. The audience actually grew.
Grew, perhaps, out of a mixture of respect and morbid curiosity. In the exposition's last months, the Temple of Music became a kind of shrine to McKinley as people retraced his last steps and flocked to see the exact spot where the president was shot. Meantime, newspapers were busy whipping up anti-immigrant hysteria. The press labeled the self-described anarchist a dangerous immigrant. But Czolgosz was born in Detroit and grew up in Cleveland. Like Abraham Lincoln's killer, Leon Czolgosz was a homegrown assassin. Nonetheless, McKinley's murder unleashed a massive backlash. Cartoons of the time show Lady Liberty using her torch to block the, quote, sewer of immigrant anarchists. Suspected anarchists across the country were rounded up with little or no probable cause. New York State quickly passed a law making advocacy of anarchy by written or spoken word a felony, punishable by 10 years in prison. Other state legislatures swiftly followed suit. Leon Czolgosz said he didn't necessarily dislike the president, and he had no complaints with any of his specific policies. After his arrest, Czolgosz said only, "I killed President McKinley because I'd done my duty. I didn't believe one man should have so much service, and another man should have none." After a two-day trial, Czolgosz was convicted of murder. He was put to death by electrocution on October 29, 1901, barely 7 weeks after his arrest. The gunshots at Buffalo forever changed presidential security. In 1901, executive protection wasn't mandated or funded by Congress. After McKinley's death, there were at least 17 proposals to beef up security. 5 years later, Congress passed a law giving the Secret Service what it had asked for, full responsibility for the protection of all future presidents. Jack Fisher.
The 1906 legislation created a much more extensive organization, and their powers and responsibilities increased significantly.
And never again would a U.S. president walk as McKinley did, freely among the people, and greet them one-on-one. Eric Westervelt, NPR News, Buffalo.